Wisconsin I has been trying to catch up with Democratic Senator Kathleen Vinaut for months. At the end of last year, she was running around the state thinking about running for governor. Then an accident shattered her arm. Then comes the crush of the end of the session. So, Senator, I've locked the door. You can't leave for a few minutes. Is that okay? Thanks for taking the time.
Good to see you again.
Well, thank you. I'm just curious. You did spend a lot of weeks on the road at the end of last year before the accident. How close did you come to running for governor? We're going to talk about a lot of things.
Sure. I came very close. There was a lot of momentum that the campaign had at the beginning of December. I had hired a staff person who was going to help me on the organizing. Basically, what she was doing was going back and contacting people that had offered to help, and we put together a whole binder of people all around the state that would organize different parts of the state. So that my plan was to spend Christmas going through, calling everybody back, figuring out the strength of the grassroots networks all around the state. Right. Of course, that my plans changed. It took a while after the accident for me to realize that the recovery was going to be a lot longer and a lot more uncertain than I originally thought. So by the middle of January, it was pretty clear that healing my arm and running for governor were just not compatible. If I was going to win, my only path that I saw to winning was to be 100% all around the state, mm-hmm. and do the Bill Proxmire wherever I could be with groups of people, be there. And that was really the path that I had, and I just couldn't do that with the injury.
That accident happened on a Sunday. I envision you in the back seat on the phone making some calls and contacts.
Yeah, it was. Actually, that's exactly what I was
doing.
You're
on the phone and exactly letting somebody else drive and take care of getting you from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Are you lucky to be alive out of that accident?
Well, it was certainly good that we didn't end up in the mess of metal in front of us. There was a series of accidents all about the same time. We sort of hit a wall of snow, mm-hmm. and I didn't realize at the time, but I think probably the truckers that were around us realized that the interstate was blocked up ahead because they slowed down to about 20 miles an hour and put their blinkers on. And at that point, right before we ended up getting off the highway, I could see ahead of us was this mass of metal with semis overturned and cars underneath them and just a mass of metal that I didn't want to head to. So I told the driver, I said, well, get off the road. We were going slow anyway. Move as slow as you can, but get off the highway.
Yep.
And so what we eventually hit was the fence post that was on the edge of the interstate, and that's what brought the car to a stop. But it was just pure ice and snow and fog, and that accident was, from what I heard, backed up about 6 miles on that border between Kenosha and Racine, and about 100 people ended up at the hospital. I think about 25 at St. Catharines in Kenosha, where I was. And I spent a lot of time in the ambulance talking as they tried to figure out how to move all the emergency vehicles, because the pileup was so bad behind us they couldn't scoot out on the shoulder because the shoulder was filled with cars down the road. And what I heard on the radio in the ambulance was not good. You know, they had coded in their triage way of coding. They had coded so many reds, so many yellows, and so many greens. And I was ambulatory because I was green. And then there were three blacks, which are fatalities.
Those are fatalities.
And I don't think that ended up being so. I think I heard that there were two, but it was really not a good situation, partly because there were so many trucks. And some of these cars had gotten underneath the trucks. And it's really a really busy part of our state interstate system from Kenosha to Milwaukee. That stretch is just very, very, very busy,
yeah.
Even on a Sunday morning.
And sometimes there's some drag racing going on. I mean,
speeding. Well,
going on.
The other part of it that I realized after I visited with folks from Racine and Kenosha is because the interstate comes so close to the lake at that point, that there is bizarre weather over the years, and people know
lake effect
that they should be careful. If they're predicting snow, it could turn very bad. And if there's one thing I learned, it's if there's bad weather, especially in Kenosha and Racine, you better cancel the event. Mm-hmm. And the local people told me later, oh yeah, we would have told you to cancel the event because you never know when you're going to have that lake effect.
Talk about your injury. Your arm was shattered in how many places?
Well, there, as far as I can tell, there are 15 major pieces, and then what the orthopedic surgeon called crumbs. It's where part of the bone just turned to dust. And so he took a wire and put in that area to try and help that little tiny bone cells bond to that wire. And then he took two titanium plates and then probably 30 some screws, and first had to put some of the bone back together before you could even get the plates on it. And then hopefully the thing he was most worried about was the articular surface of the joint, the two little condyles that rock back and forth that make your elbow work. And mm-hmm. and the cartilage was torn, but he managed to piece together enough of that cartilage so that he could get the elbow to function. So it does function, and hopefully it'll function better as it starts to heal. But he spent 8 hours doing it, and he was very concerned that I not mess up his work.
Right.
So before I had any training in how to take care of myself, it was, don't shake hands with your right hand. And he had me practice shaking hands with my left hand. He didn't want some of the wonderful old farmers to come in and grab my my right hand and
undo what he spent 8 hours doing.
Spent 8 hours doing that. Right.
Well, what percentage back are you now? You still have the brace on?
Well, I would say I'm at about 2/3 of where he's hoping that I'll get in terms of the movement. And the brace is really to protect it, because there's a little bit of bone growth, and the bone, I didn't realize this until afterwards, but the bone grows in bridges. And so there's these, he did a close-up of the x-ray the last time I was there, and he showed me these little tiny bone cell bridges that crossed the fissures of all of the breaks. And he said eventually these bridges will grow wider and then they'll start to fill in. But this is the very beginning of what is going to be healing, and it'll take a long time to do all that healing. And it takes good nutrition, lots of sleep, and just generally taking care of yourself, something that I'm afraid you can't really do if you're running around the state running for governor.
Was the accident the reason you didn't run for governor?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you had a lot of pain. You had a long recovery period.
Well, and I think part of it was the not knowing. Even to this day, I don't know for sure if I'm going to have to go in for additional surgery. He said that the surgeon said that it's roughly a 5 to 6 month period after the accident in this type of break. He knows by about 5 or 6 months whether or not there's enough of the bone that's not healing that he needs to go in and do some kind of a bone graft or some type of stem cell replacement with the bones and figure out how to fix that part that's just not working. And when you look at the timing, it just didn't make any sense to have to be back in surgery maybe 3 weeks before primary.
Absolutely.
It just, the timing didn't make sense at all.
Are you, assuming everything goes well, is your right arm going to be permanently limited? You're never going to be able to throw out the first pitch?
Well, probably not. My son, who loves ball, has been coaching me on the left hand, so I wouldn't go so far as to say never on that first pitch. I think that a lot of what I've learned how to do in the last couple months has been trying to use my left hand a lot better. Not only shaking hands, but all the activities of daily living.
So that was the first decision that you made as you got better from your injury. Second decision is, you seem pretty active. You look like to me like you're going to seek re-election.
I have not yet announced that I'm going to seek re-election, but I fully expect to. I do see the surgeon again the end of this month, and I hope that those bridges keep getting stronger and things look good. So I expect to at this point.
Okay. Let's talk about this legislative session, because as a leader, someone who thought about how did the residents of Senate District 31 fare under this session, under the budget? You voted against the tax cuts, didn't you?
I voted against Special Session Bill 1, which is the property tax cuts. I think all of the Democrats and all the Republicans voted to put $35 million into workforce training.
That's true.
Special Session Bill 2.
Thank you. But you voted against the tax cuts.
I did.
Those tax cuts...
I actually tried to amend it twice.
Right. But the tax cuts that the governor will be signing or has signed... Mm-hmm. Help residents of the 31st District. Why did you vote against them?
I believe that right now the state is not in the financial shape that the governor says it is. I have spent a lot of time with the Audit Bureau going over the annual audits and trying to figure out what's really happening with the state's budget. What we do have is a structural deficit, or spending more money than coming in going into the next year, into the next budget year. So what I feared is that the governor would spend down the surplus now, and we'd end up having to do something, probably, if the governor is still governor, cut more programs going into the next budget. Right now, the cuts for that have been experienced in the 31st Senate District are having a profound effect on state services, whether it's not cutting the grass on the roadsides out in the countryside, whether it's not plowing the snow until the snow gets to be up over 4 or 5 inches, and then the very serious problems we have with rural schools. And when I look at what's happening, one, I thought the governor should pay the bills before he gives away the money. Mm-hmm. And two, if he wasn't going to do that, at least put it in a rainy day fund.
Good.
And so one of the amendments I had was to pay down half of the debt and then use half of the surplus to pay down the debt, which is roughly about $315 million, mm-hmm. and then use the other part to put into the state savings account, the rainy day fund. That was the second amendment. Interestingly enough, it was the only amendment I could get all of the Democrats to vote on. I said to the Senate, define your fiscal conservative person and vote for me. And the only people I got were the Democrats, not the Republicans, which is curious because the Democrats didn't agree with my other bill.
So
not
you,
all of them anyway.
You would have spent $315. Governor Vinehout would have recommended as spending $315 to pay down the debt and do what? Keep it in the rainy day fund?
Right, about $315 in the rainy day fund. $315 million in the rainy day fund. $315 million to basically not borrow more because the next day the building council was going in to borrow additional money. So the particular mechanism I used was just to pay cash for what was going to be borrowed. The problem that we have is that the governor and the Republicans who voted for this are relying on the economy to improve over and above where it is now, hoping that they'll be able to not have that roughly $680 million deficit going structural deficit, mm-hmm. going into the next budget.
Hoping growth will wipe out that structural deficit.
If I was a Republican, that's how I would argue against Kathleen's plan to say we need to put the money aside, or at least part of the money we need to put it aside. I think the next budget is going to be very difficult. I think just about every major part of state government is going to have problems, financial problems. Whether you're talking about the increased number of prisoners in corrections, the structural deficit, meaning spending more than is coming in the University of Wisconsin system, the cuts over long term in terms of the operation of the technical colleges, the terrible cuts that local government have had over the years. And then finally, we talked a little bit about education. Mm-hmm. And then finally, probably the biggest problem we have in the budget is the explosion of state resources going to Medicaid, going to health care, which the state still has not been able to get under control.
I want to talk about Medicaid and health care, but I have because I respect your doctorate in that issue, but I want to come back to another issue. Senate District 31 is rural. You have how many stoplights if you don't include the city of Eau Claire?
Well, in my home county, we have one, and that's only because of the local folks call it Winona, Minnesota. So when you get up on that bridge, you gotta have a stoplight before you get up on the bridge.
There's
but
one,
that's the only one in my county.
One stoplight in Buffalo County.
Yeah, right.
I understand. I know how hard you've worked on the issue of rural schools. It's an issue that Wisconsinites invested a lot of resources in. I didn't hear in your plan for using the $1 billion surplus how you would help rural schools with any of that money. How? What's the number one way the problems of pinched rural schools can be helped?
Two pieces need to be done. If we're not going to get the whole restructuring the funding system, more money has to go to transportation and more money has to go into sparsity, which is a aid that you remember I and Senator Robson helped add to the budget in 2007. It was a small amount, but we were able to add a new part of the budget for schools that was money that went to rural schools that were under a certain
density.
Size and
yes.
had a
per square mile.
Per square mile
rural had, school districts that only have half a student per square mile.
Right.
But I'm sorry. Go
no,
ahead.
That's you're right. Ultimately, we need to change the funding formula. That is something that I wrote an alternative budget both last year and this year. That is something I funded in my alternative budget. It's definitely something that could have been done either with the surplus or with the original budget. There was roughly It would have cost roughly $700 million to do all of what State Superintendent of Schools Tony Evers requested in his budget that he asked the governor to fund back in the, well, would have been going into the 13-15 budget.
So you like Tony Evers's fair funding proposal?
I think it's a start. I don't think that it goes all the way, but I think it's a start.
Is that the one that would raise the sales tax to?
No.
It would not?
No. Okay. My point was that we don't have to raise the sales tax. We need to reallocate the existing money. We need to spend money on what we're not spending it on, and then what I didn't buy, if I could say to the governor what I don't think you should buy, was the changes in the income tax, which, you know, largely went to people who pay taxes to their more expensive, higher incomes. That's where the money went to,
Okay. Especially
the first round.
These are some of the issues that you would have raised had you run for governor, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Are these the top three issues? If you were running for governor now, you'd be using against Governor Walker?
There's one more.
Okay, give me your top issue if you run against Governor Walker. Which one?
Money and politics.
Money and politics.
Nobody's talking about it, and everywhere I went, that's what people wanted to talk about. Nobody's talking about not even just for governor, but even to run for the state senate. You have to be able to take off a year of your life. You have to put aside enough money to be able to to not have an income. Not many people can afford that unless they're personally, they can finance it themselves, or they maybe are retired. It's gotten much worse just in the 7 years since I've been senator.
How much are you going to have to raise, assuming you seek re-election this year?
In a rural Senate district, roughly around 200,000.
Okay.
But when the balance of the Senate is in play, as we saw in the Senator Gudick's Jessica King race a few years ago, we were looking at $5 million raised for a state Senate seat, because the people that were, and roughly over $4 million was just coming from the Republican side, and still just lost by 600 votes in that Oshkosh district up there, Oshkosh-Bondelag, which is one of the swing areas of the state, that in western Wisconsin.
Had you run for governor, what limits would you have put on your own campaign donations to make the point that money is hurting politics?
Well, I don't think I would have had to put any limits on it, because it was very clear I was not going to draw any big money in my campaign. Okay. And you go back and look at my finance report, and they're all very, very small donations. That was, and lots of them. And that was my path. That was what I was going to focus on, was bringing people into the system that had never been involved before and trying to turn out more people, first in the primary and then in the general election.
If you're governor, what, in light of Citizens United, what do you think can be legally done with money in politics, Senator?
The first is to take the veil off of the dark money, so that people know who's behind the independent expenditure groups. Right now, people don't know who's playing in elections. They can't find out. Everybody that donates to me, especially if they're over $100, they have to give not only their name and address, but where they work. All that becomes public record. People are limited to $1,000. Mm-hmm. And $1,000 over a 4-year period.
Right.
But these independent expenditure groups, like we saw in the Jessica King race, they are able to funnel money in and never, ever take the veil off and say where that money came from. And that's a big problem. And it's going to become a worse problem.
Yeah. Do you think it would be constitutional to have that? Any campaign finance change passed in this building is going to be challenged in court. Mm-hmm. Have you been told by people whose legal minds that's constitutional?
Well, of course, no one knows how it's going to end up in court, and there are yet more decisions to be made by the federal courts in terms of what's legal or what's not. But based on what has been done in other states, I believe that this was a great first step.
Okay. Reasons why Governor Walker should not be reelected in your terms. Money in politics, what else?
He's made very bad decisions when it comes to taking care of the affairs of state finance. Operations of government.
Okay.
Things we talked about.
Okay. What about Act 10? Would that have played a large role in your campaign for governor?
Well, certainly there are a lot of people that didn't like Act 10, but frankly, outside of the Madison area, the whole issue of Act 10 has been so distorted that it's not a winning issue.
It's not a winning issue?
No.
Anymore?
No, I don't think it ever was a winning issue. Look at where Governor Walker won in the recall. And certainly people in Western Wisconsin that voted for Governor Walker and voted for Obama have a great sense of fairness, and they said, let the guy finish out his term.
Yes.
But all the uproar that happened in Madison, the words, the real meaning of behind the words of what happened here, I don't think a lot of people in Western Wisconsin really understood. How that bill not only had to do with taking away people's rights to collectively bargain, but also how it had changed the Medicaid laws. How it gave the governor extraordinary amount of power to do what he wanted.
Okay, let's talk about that issue. How can 1 in 5 Wisconsin residents get all or part of their health care from MA, but it's a broken system? Why?
Because the state has not spent the time to understand what I would call the cost drivers in the system. Why are we spending so much money on health care? And how can we turn that pyramid upside down and
This is the PhD in you coming out. Go ahead, preach it.
Go ahead. It's common sense. As much as we can, we have to focus on prevention and what we call primary and secondary prevention, making sure that people make lifestyle changes so that we don't spend $200,000 trying to save them after they've had the heart attack. Now, something as simple as prenatal care. We know tremendous amount of the births that happen in this state are paid for by the state, and yet we cannot have a comprehensive prenatal care program through the Medicaid system. A few years ago when the audit was done on Medicaid, one of the things we found is the state does not have access to what I would call management information about the Medicaid program. We can't go into the computer system when I ask a question and have them answer me and say, these 5 things are the most costly reasons why we're spending so much money. That's how poor the computer system is.
And you and I know that everything happens in this building for a reason. Who is blocking the access to that information? Why isn't a state senator with a PhD in healthcare administration able to get those answers?
Partly because of the way the contracts were originally written. A tremendous amount of money is going into third-party vendor contracts to administer the Medicaid system. Originally, the system was set up to pay the bills. It wasn't set up to provide the management information we need on a system that is driving the state budget.
What do you estimate is the perceived savings in the MA program? We talking
what's possible?
Yes.
Oh, definitely 5%.
5%.
Now it's very difficult to change the ship because the savings is long term. A child that was born that doesn't have whose mom didn't get prenatal care may end up needing services for many, many years because maybe that child was somehow exposed to drugs or the mother was addicted or all the things that should have been dealt with before the child started. Now the child has to really push the rock uphill to get through life. So we're talking about an investment that is going to result in long-term expenditures over the life of that child. We're looking at some of these same issues with the Affordable Care Act at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Affordable Care Act that nobody talks about very much is changing that pyramid, focusing on prevention first instead of focusing on the care of the very, very sick person.
You're a Democrat. The Affordable Care Act, was it worth passing? Is it a step on the way to fixing
health
care in
America?
Yes, it is.
I did not.
A little step, baby step?
Oh, it's a pretty big step. And I think that the parts that we're talking about, being able to change that paradigm in health care, turn the focus to prevention, and then being able to collect the information so we know how well we're doing. One of the most frustrating pieces of my life as a legislator is asking questions and not getting answers. I'm used to being fact-based. When you're a professor, facts matter. But I can't get the answers. The data system was never set up to give us those answers. Well, by golly, we need to start getting those answers because nothing in healthcare is easy. But we do know some basic things. Because of the pilot projects that have been done on Medicaid all around the country, we can learn about how to deal with those people that really we can help change their behavior, keep them healthier, and keep their children healthier.
I think it was 2007. Correct me if I've got the year wrong. You and every other Senate Democrat voted for a universal health care plan in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Would you cast that same vote again? And is a universal health care plan in Wisconsin more needed than ever?
Absolutely. Yes and yes. And I'm excited to see what's happening in other states, like Vermont, states that are really trying hard to push the envelope on trying to get comprehensive health care reform in their own states using the flexibility of the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. Is your party's leading candidate for governor, Democrat Mary Burke, is she bringing these issues that you care so passionately about? Are you happy with her campaign? I know we're 7.5 months out.
Yeah.
Is she bringing the issues that she needs to win?
I think that is yet to be seen. I think that there's a lot that could be done, and I hope that she develops them. I know when people ask her, what about this, what about this? She says, wait and see. We're not there yet. So I'm waiting and seeing.
Have you two met?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just saw her again this week.
You given her advice on some of these issues?
Absolutely, yeah.
Is she getting better?
Yes, I think so. It was good to come out very clearly on the governor's mistake to not take the Medicaid money from President Obama. That would have made a huge difference. I get calls in my office all the time from people who are paying way too much for health care or fall in that gap between 100 and 133% of poverty. Just yesterday, there was somebody in my office that went to the website, signed up, said she was eligible for Medicaid. She works as a personal care worker, and then she couldn't get it. She's like, I'm so confused. Part of that reason is because of the decisions that the governor made, should not have made.
Buffalo County Democrats, do they know about Mary Burke? And if they don't, is that okay because the election's still 7.5 months away?
They do know about her. I just met with the Buffalo County Democrats on Saturday. Mary Burke did a call-in, dial-in video conferencing that I think was Sunday or Monday. The Buffalo County Democrats were setting up their video to be able to watch that. So they do know about her. They are, again, interested in seeing how the campaign unfolds.
Can she win on November 4th?
Well, that remains to be seen. It's tough for anybody. We don't know exactly how much the people around the country are going to pour into the governor's campaign. I can tell you that there's a lot of other places for Republicans to spend their money besides Wisconsin this time around. It's a little bit different dynamic, so we'll have to wait and see.
You're going to do all you can to elect Mary Burke?
I'm going to do all I can to elect her, and I'm also going to do all I can to elect the Senate Democrats. We've got some very, very good candidates running in some of the races around the state, and I think there's a good chance that the Senate could flip once more. And as you know, it's flipped many, many times before.
Oh, yes, quite often. Well, let's talk about your future. Let's make some assumptions. You run again. You win. Talk to me about the role you anticipate playing in the next session, especially if Democrats control the Senate. Would you consider running for leader?
I would consider it. Again, any election depends on timing. A lot depends on what's going to happen in the next couple of months. We're right at the point where the Senate Democrats are beginning to roll out their candidates.
Yes.
There's still some uncertainty about whether or not some Republicans are going to be running for re-election, so whether or not there's going to be some open seats. But absolutely, I'll play a leadership role. We're losing some of our very best, most experienced senators, and
yes,
there's going to be a real vacuum in the Senate Democratic caucus, depending on, you know, whether or not we're in leadership or not. I think that the policy people, the people that have years and years of experience working on the Joint Finance Committee, like Senator Bob Jauch, we're losing those people, and there needs to be a senator or a couple of them that'll step up and say, hey, I know what's behind all those numbers. Let's talk about what's real and how it's going to affect your district.
You've had an amazing 6-7 months. Have you given up on the dream of running for governor and being governor, Senator?
No, I learned in this business to never say never. And like I said, all elections are about timing, and that's just a bridge that I'll have to cross later on in my life, looking at what opportunities present themselves.
Democratic Senator Kathleen Vinant, thanks for the time. I hope you can throw the first pitch at some point. I hope your arm keeps getting better, and thank you.
My pleasure.